Hello, everybody, and welcome to NPC Cast. On today's episode, we talk about combat systems in role-playing games, and as always, we tell you what we are excited about. It is September 20th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 38 of NPC Cast.
You are now listening to NPC Cast, your place for face-to-face games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to NPC Cast, your place for face-to-face games. My name is Chris, and I'm coming to you from sunny Seattle, Washington. And like I do every single week, I have a guy with me, an NPC with me even. His name is NPC Aaron. Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing well.
How do you like the new digs? I mean, we stayed here all week.
Yeah.
We camped out.
Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do about that hole in the carpet from where we cooked marshmallows over an open fire.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have to address that. But other than that, I think we're good.
I mean, besides that, I think everything else worked really well.
I also like that the irony has returned to your sunny Seattle, Washington statement.
What do you mean?
Well, during the summer, it was really sunny all summer, and there was no irony. And now, it's gloomy and gray, and it's the Seattle
it's
I know.
It's called nighttime, sir. Nighttime, it gets dark. During the day, the birds were probably chirping.
No,
although you couldn't hear them through the rain and the thunderstorms. But somewhere out there, the birds were just singing their happy sun song.
Yes, somewhere south of here, where they have begun to migrate.
As you can probably tell, we are Dell-less again. NPC Dell is still on his sabbatical.
Yes. I believe he's training to become a Sherpa.
I think he's training Sherpas to become better Sherpas.
Oh, he's already... He was so good in the intro to Sherpaing class that they just promoted him to be an instructor.
Yep.
Okay.
They're like, you know what? This guy's got all the moves. This guy's got all the moves.
I just like the word Sherpa, I think. I don't know. It's just a fun word to say.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, before we go a little bit further, let's talk about how you can contact us if you want to talk about Sherping or... Yeah, whatever.
They're not Sherpers. They're Sherpas. Do they Sherp?
Yeah, they get their Sherp on.
I thought that was a dance that Miley Cyrus did and the nation went crazy for Sherping.
Oh, man. This episode is already the best ever. So, if you want to reach us on Twitter, you can reach me at Twitter at NPC Chris. Aaron?
At NPC Aaron.
If you want to reach us on Facebook, what is the address for that, Aaron?
Facebook.com/NPCcast.
And if you prefer email, you can always email us at thenpccast@gmail.com. Okay, so today's episode is something that we had bandied about for a while now. I remember you mentioning it somewhere around episode 12 or so. This has been one that you've kind of been wanting us to do for a while.
What episode is this?
This is episode 38, I think.
Whoa,
I don't know. Oh my God, I'm going to look it up. If you guys could see my mic setup right now, it's awesome because I have a lavalier mic attached to a mic stand, so it looks like I'm talking into nothing.
For those people that don't know, the purpose of a lavalier mic is so that you don't need a mic stand.
Right. But if it was attached to my shirt and it was making all like ruffly sounds. I can't have that.
Is this really episode 38? Did you?
This is episode 38, according to our researches.
We're about out of ideas.
We planned the arc to end around 43, but if we get picked up for another season, we could probably squeeze out another just crap storyline.
Oh, okay. The network will probably at least purchase a back nine, complete the first
season,
and then cancel us when they pick up a good pilot.
Exactly. Yeah. And we do have a few spinoffs that are already in the works along the lines of talking about content that we want to produce in the future. We should bring up some content that we mentioned earlier in our episodes, but have failed to produce thus far.
Yes. So Drafts with Drafts is a thing that we have wanted to do for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And we, to be like totally transparent, have attempted it. And it wasn't where we want it to be.
Nope.
We have kind of a high standard we hold ourselves to. You guys wouldn't know from listening, but...
you can't tell by listening.
Yeah, but
we have a relatively high standard for what we like to put out.
So yeah, and we didn't think it was entertaining enough, and so we have some ways that we're gonna change it, and we'll probably try it again, but we don't have a timeline yet on when that will be. So
right, and I bring that up because we were asked very specifically on Twitter, and so we figure there's a lot of people who are listening that maybe were wondering the same thing. If we assume if one person says something, that there's at least like 10 people that feel the same way. So, yeah, we're working on it. We want to definitely get more content for you guys. We also have plans for a future TPK. Those are also in the works. We have some ideas to bring TPKs back with a bang. And I was just mentioning that because it's another thing that we were asked on Twitter recently. So there you go. Hopefully you guys are listening and those are the answers that you were looking for. Moving on to today's topic, which, as I said, we've been kind of throwing around for a while, and we figured, why not?
Bandying was your verb of right. choice.
It's been banded, and we've been throwing it around for a while, banding it around for a while, and we're going to go ahead and just pull the trigger on it. Just get it done, right?
I was good at the pull the trigger thing, because it's combat.
It's what?
We're going to talk about how different RPG systems handle combat.
Yes, we want to talk about combat. Arguably the most important thing in RPGs, except for like the whole R part and P part. It's very important to the G part, though. I don't know if that's going to make it in. I always say things I'm not sure if they're going to make it in or not, but we'll see how it feels in post.
See, I say things that I know aren't going to make it in. Like, right. I just say something like that's
or
going.
To make it halfway in.
Yeah, apparently.
Accidentally, sorry, whoops.
Different systems handle combat in a lot of different ways. We could probably like break it down into a bunch of shows, but we'd like to do kind of a general like look at them and talk about what we like about different kinds of combat systems and go from there.
Right. And so this is going to be sort of our perspective on, you know, the games we've played. This is not a comprehensive breakdown of every type of combat system. I just want to preface it before we get into it. We're just going to give you some pros and cons of the game's system or the combat systems that we're most familiar with and sort of our ideas for what makes them really good and what makes combat systems a little bit more sluggish.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the types of combat systems in general. And to begin with, we broke these down into two basic camps. Although there is a gradient, which we'll talk about in a little bit, what are the two basic camps of what are the two basic types of combat systems, Aaron?
On one end of the spectrum, you have the very tactical, very crunchy combat systems, mm-hmm. where combat is almost like a mini game that begins when you come into conflict. And you, on the other end of the spectrum, you have abstract systems where there's not a lot of like tactics, and it's oftentimes these don't have a minigame. They're just a continuation of the game mechanics, and they don't really change. Or there's such a light change that it's, you know, it's quick, and it's more about what the characters go through in the combat than how much damage you do and that kind of thing.
Right. And I've always been a pretty big proponent of the idea that that role-playing games are, at their core, are revolved around sort of snap judgments of what these characters want to do. And if sort of your imagination is able to kind of run wild and sort of accomplish whatever you want to accomplish within the game. So I tend to sort of favor a little bit more in my personal playstyle some of the more abstract types of combat systems, ones that reward sort of imagination and ingenuity and sort of storytelling, for lack of a better term, because storytelling, and when it refers to RPGs, oftentimes doesn't, you know, equate to combat necessarily. But in this case, I mean, I like combat to be sort of theatrical, and I think that in many ways you get the most theatrical style of combat through abstract systems.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with most of that. I myself kind of appreciate both kinds of systems, and I generally, different parts of my personality get satisfied by the different systems. My ideal systems are somewhere in the middle, but I played 4th edition for a long time, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a system that's more crunchy and tactical. Like it very much has the combat minigame feel. I know people who literally just play it as like a combat minigame, essentially.
Right, and I think that, I mean, you can find some pretty crunchy, like, theater-of-the-mind systems, but as far as, like, you know, the tactical element, 4E is pretty much near the top of that spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, you can't play 4E without a grid. So it's not possible to do its combat system without a grid. It's got very, very, very defined rules about status conditions and how long, you know, it's the powers are in little blocks, and it feels very much like that, a separate game from the role-playing a lot of times. Which is not to say I don't like it. I haven't played it recently because I'm kind of not in that mind frame of wanting that. If you back off a little bit, you get some of the other D&D-alike systems, which can be played either way. And you also get systems like Savage Worlds, where there's tactical movement, but there's not this like very well-defined list of different fighting techniques for the fighter, and it's just a little bit less crunchy. In the same way, Iron Kingdoms kind of falls into that slightly less crunchy thing. It's still tactical. You still get to measure your movement and move your guy and get line of sight, and all those are things that you're going to want that physical reference point for, but it's not quite as much of a mini game.
Yeah, and see, this is something that I've always kind of struggled with, is I like my combat to be a little bit more narrative controlled, where I'm not necessarily picking a power to use at any given time. The types of situation you get in 4E, for example, where you have, you know, your at will powers, your encounter powers, and your daily powers. And you're sort of picking the best option, you know, out of your toolbox for that occasion. I tend to sort of gravitate more towards systems that let me sort of create, you know, my action, you know, out of thin air almost, and then sort of, you know, follow through with that. That being said, I'm also a very big fan of having a visual reference, right? Like I enjoy having minis on a map, and whether that map is a direct representation of the battlefield or not, or more of an abstraction of the battlefield, I'd like to have that visual element there to sort of keep me grounded. But I think that the main difference that we're talking about with 4E, and we talk about why it's so tactical, even more so than a game like Iron Kingdoms, which is pretty much, you know, a minis game in its combat. Like it is basically a minis game. I think it's the powers and sort of the way that you go about choosing your actions in those tactical games are what really make them feel that way.
Yeah, I think the granularity of powers being so high also just... I don't know. I mean, I won't say that you can't still be very narrative, but when you have 15 different ways on your sheet of hitting somebody with a sword, it's hard to brainstorm up a cool way to hit somebody with a sword. You know, you just like, I hate the like, I tide of iron this turn. I move up and tide of iron. I hate that. Mm-hmm. But even I end up doing that when I play that game because it just, my brain can't. I can't find narrative space between those powers, as where in Iron Kingdoms or Savage Worlds, the powers are much less like defined even. And many classes don't have very many of them. Like when I was playing a pugilist, I just narrated what I wanted to do by punching people. And then occasionally we'd find a little special rule that would help that situation. But a lot of times they were just, you know, punching people. Right. They were just regular attacks. And in Savage Worlds, the powers are all like bolt or sleep, or they're very general. And then you can kind of apply your imagination to them. And I think that's pretty good because it helps the people who can't just pull something from the ether this easily. It gives them a starting point to then like work around and imagine something cool. Whereas if you go the full on, you know, the world is your oyster and there's no actual like defined power, some people can't, it, you know, it's giving a restriction helps creativity sometimes. And so I think they're useful in that way.
I mean, I think that, you know, you bring up a good point, and you know, even, you know, the best players will occasionally fall into those traps where it's like, well, you know, if I have to describe every single action, you know, occasionally some actions are just going to be I punch him in the face and sort of run with that. And then on the flip side of that is if every action is, you know, I tide of iron, I'm tied, you know, and they have like their, you know, a card with some flavor text on it that basically says like what they're doing. I think it's two sides of the same coin, right? Like neither one of those is the ideal. An ideal situation would be something like, you know, closer to an Iron Kingdoms where you have abilities that you can do in combat, but you also have the freedom to sort of work within the framework of the scene as it's set.
And that's why I'm okay with this still requiring like a physical space to move minis around in, because for me, it's easier for me to come up with like using a prop or using the environment if I can see at least an outline of what that environment is on paper, or at least see like kind of how we're positioned. That might inspire something that I wouldn't have thought to do otherwise, because we're just talking and it's all in the mind. And if you move, like continue moving down that spectrum, you get to fate. Depending on the fate system, is either going to have zones and kind of this very minimal tactical element as far as zones are concerned, or it's, you know, some versions of it don't even play with the zones at all and are totally theater of the mind, which I think is a pretty good place to be for those types of games where you're, you know, invoking aspects and creating narrative elements, you know, with your fate points and that kind of thing.
I also want to sort of break in and drop the caveat of, keep in mind, these are all games that we actually like playing. So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, games that we prefer, it's more like, you know, we're choosing from, you know, our favorite children. You know, it's like these are things that we enjoy doing. So I'm not trying to knock 4E for the style of game it is. But I think that being aware of how combat is handled in an RPG gives you a really good indication of whether or not that RPG is right for you and right for your playgroup. Like, it's one of the best elements that you can look at to say, you know, if an RPG is like Fate, where it's going to handle combat in a more narrative, you know, narrative focused way, that will work for some playgroups better than others, right? And being able to identify these elements within these games is really what helps you choose the system that's right for you.
Yeah, and then at the far end, I think, of the spectrum are systems like the world system, Apocalypse World, Dungeon World, where there's not actually really a distinction that much between combat and non. You're still using moves, and the narrative never really like changes pace because there's no initiative or anything like that. I had never, until those systems came about, really approached playing a game like that. I was so used to like, okay, we're in combat, roll initiative. And there's something really cool about not having that break, I think, between, you know, the initiative roll is always the thing that the mood changes and, you
well,
know,
it's like,
the
it's
switch
like,
is flipped.
It's like the JRPG, like you're walking through the forest and all of a sudden like...
Yeah, it's the screen spin zoom, you know, like that's your initiative roll.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to have games where like that never happens, where like, you know, there's always danger, and because, you know, Dungeon World is about exploring dungeons, there's always danger, and whether it's like a narrow, slippery passageway, you know, with a pit on the sides of it, or a group of goblins, it's still handled like the same way by the system, and you get that same pace all the way through, which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, these are games that I, you know, all games that I enjoy, but I'm not sure which I prefer. I sometimes like it when combat feels a little bit different than the rest of the game. Mostly because a lot of times, in sort of my most memorable sessions, you know, they've been a little bit more action oriented campaigns, a little bit more combat driven, sort of militaristic styles of campaigns, and I think it's nice to have sort of that have a different weight to those encounters than you do to your scenes, right? I think that in some ways, sort of the best role playing can kind of come out when your role playing scenes are given like the room to breathe, and then the combat comes in, and then that's where the system sort of crunches up a little bit, and you actually had that conflict resolution. Because at the really far, like even past the Dungeon World and Apocalypse World stuff, is you're getting into straight story games, right? Like Fate, for example, like Fiasco, for example, which literally does not have any combat resolution at all, you know, and it's sort of, you know, whether or not you want to lump it into an RPG or not is up to you and scholars and historians, but not me. But either way, sort of you
In 10,000 years, we'll know definitively.
I think so.
The debate will have been hashed out through the ages.
Yeah, by the next race to inherit the Earth, probably. Yeah. So I want to get back to the idea of having that visual representation. Let's say that there's a game. Let's use Fiasco as an example, right, Aaron? What do you think? In what ways do you think sort of the action fighting scenes in a straight story game like Fiasco would be if you just said, we're playing Fiasco, we're not adding any more rules, we're just going to put minis down and sort of draw a map and see and sort of like plot out the blocking of where we are in this house or whatever, this location?
I don't know. I think like, I don't know if I'd approach conflict differently or not. It's hard to say. Right now in Fiasco, I tend to just avoid that unless I really know and trust the people we're playing with, mm-hmm. because I really don't want the story to turn into the, like, I shoot you, nuh-uh, you missed, which is not interesting for anybody. So I tend not to play characters that would get into that in Fiasco, and I also tend not to try if my character could get into that. In fact, if anything, I'll do the opposite and like throw myself into a purposely losing situation. Recently when we were playing with Karis, I purposefully like inspired him to throw me into the feed machine for the penguins in the Antarctic. Like I made a gesture that made it very clear that he should do that. And that's more my like style. I'd rather like have an interesting story than be the last gunslinger standing in Boomtown or something.
Well, I mean, it's like playing like action figures when you're a kid. Like, have you ever tried like, okay, I'm gonna be like Duke and you're gonna be Cobra Commander? It's like, that doesn't work. Because like you can't do that. It's just you want to sort of you can't sort of expect people to behave in that way. When I play Fiasco, the first thing I do in every scene is just shoot the person, the NPC. Like it's like, oh, I'm a politician who's running for president. I shoot you. You're bang. You're dead. I'm also I was a former sniper in the military, so I have excellent aim. You're dead.
Yeah. You shoot an NPC, or you shoot one of the other players?
You know, whoever's there.
Oh, okay.
Just sort of spray and pray.
Okay. you know, I've played Fiasco, and while I don't remember the intricacies of our games down to the T, I don't remember spray and pray being a part of them.
Yeah, that's because it was over so quick.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, so I brought up the sort of map idea because, you know, to me, the way that you sort of perceive the action at the table and the way sort of everyone can kind of buy into the scenes, I think really adds to those types of elements. Like, we played Edge of the Empire. And Edge of the Empire, I would say, is one of those sort of in the middle between completely abstract and completely tactical. It does have sort of like, you know, it's really cool in the way that it handles it. It inspires you to use your surroundings and inspires you to create narrative in many of the same ways that games like Exalted do, where it rewards you for coming up with sort of ways to influence, narratively influence the combat. But it also has, you know, range bands, right? Where it doesn't have, you know, very specific exact ranges for your powers and your abilities, but it has sort of, this is engaged, you have short, medium, long, very long, or whatever. So you have these different ranges, right? And when we first played, when I first played Star Wars Edge of the Empire, we sort of used the experiment of, we had our minis and we put them on the mat, but instead of drawing like the scene sort of any sort of facsimile of what it looked like, we just drew bands. And we're like, okay, so everyone that is in this band is, you know, close, and that's, you know, and we kind of really, really like made it very, very abstract. And it didn't work at all, right? Like, it's because it was so far removed from what we have come to know and come to expect from, you know, manipulating minis on the game board, that I personally would have preferred to have, you know, nothing at that point, because it took you way out of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, there is sort of an uncanny valley in the physical representation, right, where it's mm-hmm. like, it's good, and then it gets too abstract, and it's like, nope, rather I have nothing, and then you come back for the Theater of the Mind, and it's good again.
Yeah.
And I agree. We played in a game at Gen Con where we didn't have the resources, and the GM attempted to display where we were, and really it just like took me totally out of the game, and And even the fact that I got to eat the starbursts that were representing the monsters didn't fix it.
It was delicious.
It was. The most delicious combat I've ever been in, but
right. And then, you know, as to bring it back to Gen Con, and then you have something like Old School Hack, which sort of has a like an abstract feel, but it's like, but you're not using minis, and you're not trying to pseudo represent like their surroundings. It's just it's zones, right? Like, yeah, you are in this zone, they are in this zone.
Yeah, Fate's zones and Old School Hack are the edge of that uncanny valley to me. If you try to abstract further than that, I'd rather just have nothing.
Yeah, I think it really came down to the inclusion. It was the combination. It was a combination of having range bands and then minis. Like, that to me is what made it like just weird and sort of hard to kind of grok, right? Is because as soon as the minis are brought out, I want, you know, even if you're not counting, you know, squares, and you're just sort of drawing like very loose sort of here's where a bush is and here's where, you know, the cliff edge is or whatever on your dry erase board. Even if it's really loose and you're just kind of winging it, you still want to have that sort of that visual representation when it comes to combat. Because the idea being that while most of you are, you know, theater of the mind in it, and you're imagining the combat as going through, you also want to have something that sort of keeps you all on the same page. So the GM doesn't have to continually just remind you of like, okay, no, you're behind that couch. You know, you're still behind the couch. Like, he's on the other side of the couch from you. You want to have that sort of assistance, right? That's not to say that it can't be done completely theater of the mind, because I've also played campaigns that have done that. But, you know, having every little bit, I think, helps keep the game moving in sort of, so you don't have to, you have to ask less questions when it comes to your turn, and enables you to just choose your actions.
So let's dig in a little bit and start. So the very beginning of combat in most systems that have a separate system, like I said, is the initiative roll. That's mm-hmm. that's the signifier that we're in that alternate game mode. And different games handle initiative differently. So Dungeon World, for instance, has no initiative. The initiative that everyone is pretty much used to is, you know, the roll d20 and add a number to it, and whoever has the highest goes first, and it breaks into this thing. There's also systems that give multiple initiative passes based on speed. I haven't read Shadowrun 5th edition yet, so I don't know if it does, but I know that older editions did that. Some of the older White Wolf systems did that. Like, do you like it to have, like, more depth to the who goes when, or do you prefer the just roll, determine a turn order, and continue?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough, right? Like, I think that it's sort of table-dependent. I like the idea of having the simplest method is sometimes the easiest, right? Like, having everyone roll initiative. You know, sometimes it's even a shared initiative for monsters. I believe, you know, there's some versions of D&D and some, you know, especially some, specifically some house rules I know that where you just roll for them all the monsters and they just go at the same time or whatever. But it's interesting how something like initiative changes the way that combat feels, right? Angry DM had a post recently where he talked about a house rule that he had sort of made for Pathfinder, in which he called it like popcorn initiative or something like that, based off, you know, a children's game, I guess. But the idea being that when you go, you choose the next person to go, and so on and so forth. So everyone will go in one round, and then at the very end, that person gets to go, you know, twice or whatever, and then pick the next person. And he wrote a pretty long, sort of intricate post about this and trying this method out. And it's really, really fascinating to see, like, sort of what type of gaming happens with different types of initiative, right? You know, he said that there was a little bit more metagaming on the behalf of the players, but he said that he didn't mind it as much because of the way that it was being structured. You had a lot of people talking in sort of character, and you had people more involved, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna set him up, I'm gonna throw him at you. You got him? Can you take that orc? All right, cool. You're next. And they sort of communicate a little bit more. You know, obviously you don't want, you know, every sort of, you know, every turn to at the very end
everyone stops and then they discuss for 15 minutes who's best to go next. You have to have a very, like, you know, a strong-voiced DM to sort of keep things under control. But initiative is one of those things where it's like, you know, a lot of games do it in a lot of different ways, and it really changes the feel of the way that combats work. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, like, the biggest difference in most initiative systems is whether the initiative order stays the same from round to round or whether you roll at the top of each round. I'm really torn over which one I like best, because on one hand, like, combat should be, like, somewhat unpredictable, and it feels more chaotic when I go in a different place every round. I don't know where, you know, I can't fully strategize, like, the set 'em up, knock 'em down philosophy that way. But on the same time, I like only having to roll once and then not having to, like, you know, spend the time writing an initiative order or moving around your little placards with everybody's name on it each round. So it's hard for me to say, but they feel, with just that one tiny change, they feel way different to me. Mm-hmm. And I play them way differently. If the initiative round stays the same, then I find players do a lot of, oh, I'm going to delay my action, I'm going to get in here, I'm going to, you know, in order to optimize the order the players act in, they do that sort of mm-hmm. thing a lot. If combat's more chaotic, then there's a lot more like just, you know, screw it, I'm going to do whatever I can with this turn as its own, like, entity. So it's one of those things where you just change a little bit and it affects the game heavily.
Have you ever played in a game where your choice of what you're going to do determines where you are in the initiative?
Yes, I have.
I did that in a, I was playing, the Street Fighter, the old White Wolf system. The Street Fighter initiative system is based on, the Street Fighter's combat system is based on moves, right? Like, I'm going to jab, or I'm going to strong, or I'm going to fierce. And the different moves you choose each turn, you choose them face down. You have, like, little cards. You put them face down, and you're like, okay, this is what I'm going to do this turn. Everyone reveals, and then based on the speed of the attack is when you go in initiative. So you can say, like, okay, like, I think he's going to, like, you know, do something slow. I'm going to do a roundhouse kick or whatever and do my strong kick. It's a little bit slower, but it does more damage. And so you can, so every turn, it very much felt like a fighting game in that way. And sort of how your powers and stuff worked as well.
Does White Wolf do that system print on demand? Because I really want to play it.
It's super fun. I don't know.
I really want to do a TPK of the Street Fighter RPG.
It's, I mean, it's weird because it's sort of silly, right? Like, because it's Street Fighter, but it did a lot of cool things. I mean, I like the White Wolf system in general, but the way they did combat was really fun. And, you know, it was you know, choosing powers, and it was very, very tactical in the way that it worked. And this was, like, you know, years before 4E, obviously. So this was the first game I played where I actually printed out, like, you know, power cards for, like, the different abilities I had. My Tiger Knee was, like, a card, you know?
Oh, which segs into kind of, we wrote down powers, but it's more of powers or actions. Basically, like, how systems handle what you can do on your turn.
This is one of, I may get a little bit ranty here for a second, but not too long, though. It'll be a short rant. But go on, I'm sorry.
I mean, a lot of systems are going to have an action economy. 4E is famous for the move minor standard idea, which is actually a very elegant, cool idea. And there are similar systems in a lot of things. I like the Savage World systems, where you can do as many different things as you want, but to represent you having to do them faster, you take a bigger penalty the more things you try to do, which is kind of neat because it feels a little less like, you know, oh, why can't I shoot my gun and slice with my, you know, it feels a little more narrative in that way. Mm-hmm. And then there are, you know, kind of games like GURPS, which is broken down to literal second increments in combat where you literally do a thing every turn. And that's, like, pretty much all you do is the one tiny thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for the action economy side of it, do you have a preference, or do they?
Yes, I have a preference, and this is sort of my thing is this, is when I am playing a role-playing game, and this is true for in combat and out of combat, if I, as a DM, ask my players, I you know, say, here's a situation. The goblin jumps through that window right there to my right, lands on the table, it has a sword, and it's baring its teeth, and it looks like it's ready to, you know, kill me. Right? What do you do, Aaron? What I don't want you to do is look at your character sheet and use that to sort of gauge the action that your character is choosing. And to me, despite my love for tactical games like 4E and, you know, Street Fighter, which I just mentioned, is to me the essence is I think that you should be able to do whatever you want. And in some circumstances, having powers there, it while you are technically free to make up maneuvers and do things you want, the sole fact that you have powers there is usually, more often than not, you're going to be inclined to rely on those things that you know you can do over things that you're not sure you'll be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I look at my sheet a lot, but I try to use it as inspiration because that person's different than me a lot of times, right? So, for instance, in the branch of the jeweled tree, I usually didn't just say I bolt. I usually would describe, you know, which vial Kazuo opened and what he was attempting to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so that I need to remember, you know, I need to look at my sheet to be like, okay, remember how this person is. I need to do what this person would do in that situation. So I understand that, but I think that there are games that then cross the threshold where I have to look at my sheet to know what I'm going to do this round, essentially. You know, I have to see what my attack modifier and damage for that particular ability is. And right. that's kind of what I want to avoid with players in general, is I don't want that to be what controls it. And I would rather, if at all possible, them to be looking at that physical representation of the battlefield and listening to what I'm saying, and then that being at least the main inspiration for how they act.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, right? It's like, I understand the balance. I understand the reason why you want to give players options, because there's going to be some players who, I include myself in one of those, where sometimes I don't know exactly what my character would do. So it's nice to be able to say, okay, well, he has this ability. Cool, I can do that. Cool, I have magic missile. I can use it whenever I want. Cool, I can do a magic missile, right? What I don't like, though, is I don't like being taken out of describing these cool stories. And this is, you know, sort of the kid in me who fell in love with role playing, is I like to picture the things in my head, you know, like I see in movies or like I read in books, and sort of enact these combats, right? And I can't imagine, you know, a Lord of the Rings combat where Legolas is standing in one place and shooting his bow turn after turn, because it seems like it's like, you know, the optimal decision, you know? And so sometimes I think if everything you do is so defined in it by, you know, the powers that you have, occasionally it doesn't give you any wiggle room there. If I look at my sheet and I know that, okay, this is like, this guy seems like the final boss in this dungeon, I might as well use my dailies, because that's like the optimal thing, and I might as well use them early, because the earlier the better. Like, the goal is, you know, it's like, oh hey, like, we're gonna try to focus fire down, you know, this minion here or this monster, because the smart thing to do is focus fire one down, so I'm gonna, you know, just shoot at him because he's already been wounded or whatever. Like, those types of things are what kind of like irk me and kind of take me out of, you know, my verisimilitude or my imagination, and that's why, although I love, you know, Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition for what it is, when I play that game, I don't go into it thinking, okay, I want to play a role playing game, and I pick it off the shelf. I think I want to play a tactical game with role playing elements. And that's sort of the way I frame it. And that game is a great game, but it's not my flavor, you know, it's not my personal flavor every time I decide I want to play something.
What I just realized thinking about it, since you said optimal, is how optimal is often, if that same action was taken in a purely narrative format, like a movie or a book, is actually dumb. It's not satisfying at all. Like, the idea of like blowing your best powers right when you get into the fight and then basically just stabbing weakly at the bad guy until he dies from there on out is like super terrible. And the idea of like focus firing the wounded enemy until he's dead because it's less attacks doesn't sound very fun. And the idea of performing optimally and not doing anything foolish in combat is not exciting. Like, if Legolas was a character in a role-playing game, a lot of players would never have attempted to take down that Oliphant, for instance. Like, you know, if in a lot of role-playing games that I've played in, unfortunately, if I described, okay, this is what I want to do, like, a lot of DMs are going to be like, that's dumb, that Oliphant's huge, it has this many hit points, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, come on, we're playing an action role-play, you know, a fantasy action game. Like, this is the kind of stuff you should want to do. Mm-hmm. And I have to fight myself whenever a player does that from being like, you know, oh, well, that was dumb, you're dead. And being like, more like, well, this is a better story if Del jumps off of the roof and tussles with a guy who on a jetpack holding on to him, you know, that's more interesting. So yeah, that when a game has the emphasis on the optimal, I think that it can definitely hurt the narrative.
Right, and I think, and that's sort of the downside to having, you know, maneuvers or powers or something like that, is that too often it's like, it's your choices become limited to those things, and you don't think outside of the box. That's why games where, like, you know, Exalted, for example, where the more insane and elaborate your description, the more likely that is to succeed, I think is pretty cool. Again, it's one of those things that, you know, maybe it doesn't work in every game. If you want to have like something, if you're playing, you know, a Cthulhu based role playing game, and you're like, well, I'm gonna go up and like, I'm gonna climb up Cthulhu and stab him in his eye. It's like, no, you're just dead.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, yeah. Sorry, that's
different case. But, right. Yeah.
So I mean, it really doesn't matter on sort of on what you want to get out of it, but. That's sort of my pet peeve is when you have that situation where, you know, you're like, what do you want to do? Give me a second. And they look down and they're just like, shield bash.
You know who else hates that? Del.
He does.
It takes time. So, I mean, we've already kind of talked at length, but there are a couple other elements of combat.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have a whole episode over, you know, debating over what a hit point represents. But
yeah. But
how you take damage and wounds is a big... that does really affect the mood of combat. You know, some systems like D&D just have a straight number, and when it goes down, you're dead, or you're unconscious, and then a bit further, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
I like Fate's system a lot. I like that you can take damage as...
Big surprise.
Yeah. Guess what, guys? I like Fate. Fred Hicks, keep sending my checks. No. So... I like that as you take damage, you can decide to take it as this fatigue and as, you know, the straight up hit points of the game. But you can also trade that out to take a negative aspect and take like, oh man, I have like a hurt knee or like a bum ankle or something as you get wounds, because it gives you these narrative tools in taking damage that hit points don't necessarily, because a lot of times you're like, if I've been sliced three times by a sword, you know, that's not half hit points. That's like, I'm very dead. And it makes you abstract hit points, which some people do really dislike the concept of hit points as an abstraction of, you know, many things from actual stabbing down to your luck in combat. Like, how, you know, your luck's run out when your hit points are done. Now you're actually getting stabbed, as before you were just narrowly, you know, dodging it.
Right.
So where do you fall? Like, how do you like your damage represented?
I mean, for me, I take a step back. I think that I care less about how damage is represented than I do with how, I want to say, accidentally deadly combat is. When I'm looking at like an RPG, trying to figure out, you know, what's right for this, you know, this whatever campaign idea or my playgroup this particular week or whatever, I don't know, hit points are easy, like having a number that ticks down, like, you know, we grew up in a video game generation, you know, we grew up with hit points the way they work, they, you know, the way they have worked forever. I understand that, and I don't need a game to sort of abstract those things. Like, there's some games where, you know, you have wound levels, and you'll be like, you know, now you're like, you're slightly wounded, now you're, you know, bruised, now you're like, you know, severely wounded or whatever. I don't really need those sort of layers. I'm cool with just hit points. But for me, the way it handles the end, like the death, is really what I think, or, you know, going down to zero or those types of things, is what really sort of kind of gets me thinking about whether or not the system is right or not.
Yeah, I mean, different systems obviously are meant for different things, mm-hmm. like you said. For instance, if you want to be, you know, like near invincible, you know, superheroes, then maybe just a straight up like system with three wounds and then you're dead is probably not the system you want, because it doesn't feel that way. But there's some excitement to really having to think, do I peek around and continue shooting, or do I just run away because one bullet could end me, is also super cool and interesting. And what's interesting is that the other thing we're going to talk about was status effects, and one thing that the systems with the narrative elements in them are with, like, the you're at this wound level so you take this penalty that's nice about them is you don't need these separate, like, status effects, or at least as many of them, because a lot of them are folded into these aspects or these wound levels that knock you down. And I kind of like that because it doesn't create, like, a lexicon you have to know. Like, I'm dazed. Oh, it's dazed this? No, that's staggered. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you sure that's not shaken? You know, it doesn't create this, like, dictionary of terms you have to know, which is kind of the downside of I think Pathfinder has, like, 30 or so status effects, and at this point, I don't even use the words. I just tell people what the penalty is.
Right. So yeah, I mean, status effects are its own thing, right? Like, I think that, a way system handles hit points, a way system handles status effects, a way system handles death. Those are all sort of different elements of the overall, you know, idea of a character's well-being and its well-being in combat. Certain systems will have, for example, Iron Kingdoms, sort of. It has this amalgamation of all different types of things, right? It uses a life spiral, like the same as, like, you know, War Machine and Hordes does, where, you know, you get hit for a certain number of points of damage, but then those go to different areas of your life spiral, which when one gets, you know, all the way crossed off, it has this sort of status effect in a way in combat. And then, you know, if you lose all your points, then you are rolling on a chart to see, like, how long lasting this damage is. You know, you could lose a limb or do something, and that's sort of to bring it back to the death idea, that's kind of the one house rule I made in the Iron Kingdoms combat system. Was in Iron Kingdoms, when you go to zero, you roll 3d6, you consult a chart, and that tells you, you know, the lasting effects of the damage that you have just taken. If you roll 3 ones, your character dies. And I thought that, to me, for the campaign I was running at the time, that was so far, like, removed from, you know, what I wanted is, you know, I was telling a specific story and I didn't really want there to be sort of an accidental oops, you died moment in a system that doesn't have that except for that one part.
Yeah, and I think we could do a whole show on character death because it's such a touchy subject and people approach it. I think
we should do a show on character death.
Yes. That's a good idea. So I think we can get into that idea of, like, what makes death, and do you want important character deaths, or do you want that oops feeling that certain games like Paranoia are kind of built on? That's kind of a topic we could delve into. And we have already talked a lot about combat systems and what we prefer about them and what makes them tick. And I hope that our listeners have kind of appreciated that look under the hood and maybe thought about, you know, which now they'll approach which system they're going to use for their game in a different way. Because I think that one thing that a lot of listeners have mentioned is that they like hearing us break down these RPGs because it's made them do what we do, which is the, I'm running a game, what do I run it in? And less like, I'm going to run this game.
Right. And that's how I think, that's how I kind of, when we opened, I kind of wanted to frame the discussion in that way. Like, we are not additionists. There's not one right way and a plethora of wrong ways to play these games. I mean, they all have their place for depending on, you know, the settings right for you. So, you know, hopefully, I feel like, you know, what we like to do is we like to say, here's all the options, or here's a lot of the options that you have. And now you can kind of make a choice based on these thoughts. Whereas before, you might have just, you know, picked up that Pathfinder book because that's the system you know the best, or you might have picked up that Dungeon World book because that's the system you know the best. But try out other combat systems. Read other, you know, go to forums. Go to, you know, the internet has a lot of resources on it that you can sort of figure out people actually breaking down these different, you know, the pros and cons of these different combat systems. And maybe there's a game out there that you haven't tried that, you know, based on the combat system, you might want to gravitate towards and try out and see if maybe it works for your play group or your campaign idea. So, yeah, I think that's a really good point, Aaron, that I just made.
So let's move on to what we are excited about.
Yes. So that being said, let's move on to the what we are excited about portion of the show. And we will do that right now. On to the what we are excited about portion of the show. We will start with you, Aaron. Aaron, what are you excited about this week?
I have fallen down the War Machine Hordes minigame rabbit hole, and I'm loving it. Like, I've
fallen deep down the rabbit hole.
I've been listening to podcasts. If you're interested, Chain Attack and Muzon Minis are two really good minis-based podcasts. I've been reading lists and matchups and, you know, reading about the World Team Championships. It's how when I played Magic more seriously, or I thought I was playing it seriously, I did that, and it was super fun, and I'm doing that again with minis, and it's awesome. I'm having so much fun just going home and reading circle strategies for all my various warlocks and when to use them and when not to use them, and that's super cool.
Yeah, I think that War Machine Hordes, Warmer Hordes in particular, is very good at scratching the same itch that Magic scratches for a lot of people, and that's the competitive, like, hardcore, you know, sort of strategist that exists in a lot of players, because it's such a balanced system that is really designed to be, you know, played competitively. I think, like, you know, one of the very first things it says in the rule book is play like you have a pair, and it really embraces that. And a lot of minis games don't do that. I think that the newer ones are kind of gravitating more towards that because they realize that a large part of the player base wants that.
Yeah, and one thing that I really love about, like, the more organized play in Warmer Hordes is that there's so many different formats and options. And that's what I loved about Magic. I like the idea of playing limited and playing standard and playing, you know, modern or something, that all are different. Today I was reading about the Masters format, where you pick three casters with three lists and you go to this tournament, and it's broken into three match sections, and during that you have to use each of those casters and lists once. So you have to, like, really think, like, okay, I can play this guy now, but that leaves me possibly with this warlock who has a lot of bad matchups later. I can play him now. It's not a great matchup, but, you know, it's like, it's so cool, like, all of that, you know, that gaming of the whole format to me is very cool. And I miss that, having not been playing Magic as seriously. And now that I'm doing this, it's come back.
How is it on the pocketbook?
I've made myself a rule, because I did buy quite a few minis. I said I'm not going to buy any more circle until I get about half of what I have painted. And I think I'm just going to kind of keep that rule at any one time. You know, like, when I paint more, I can buy more. And that way it forcibly makes me kind of budget it out a little bit. Mm. Or just buy different games and paint them instead, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and my thing is that at any given moment, I am, you know, a very, very small breeze away from falling down that same minis hole, because I'm lucky I don't work for a miniatures company anymore, because when I did, I definitely subscribed to the sort of the shiny syndrome, where if something's out and it looks cool, I want one. Our friend Tony is like that. I went to Tony's house and played some Legendary over the weekend, and he has, like, his minis table set up, and he has, you know, a one of, you know, Signar caster there being painted. I'm like, do you play Signar? He's like, no, but the mini was really cool. And I'm the same exact way. Like, I will buy my little army and it probably get it halfway done before I'm buying, like, models in other armies, models in other games, just because they're cool. And I envision a world where someday I'll get the time to paint them, when I know that's not true. But that being said, I had noticed, though, that, and you've been pretty good at putting stuff on the Facebook too.
Yeah, and I've gotten comfortable enough with the actual painting beyond priming that I'm probably going to start posting some pictures from that. Largely with your advice, actually, since you are the more adept painter of the of the show. So,
dude, you've been dry brushing?
I've been dry brushing. I've even done the dry brush beneath the wash, like you suggested, which does blend very nicely on the fur. So,
yeah, it's very nice fur you have there. So.
So what are you excited about?
Well, I'm excited about something that is pretty much the most awesome thing that I've ever seen in my life. And this is coming from someone who I spent this past Sunday watching a lot of American football. I'm a pretty big football fan. I love the game. I think that if you're a gamer and you don't enjoy watching football, you're not looking at it in the right way. I think that football is at least as good as any esport. That being said, there were some commercials that I saw that introduced me to a whole new world of which I am hoping to become a part of very, very soon. That world is a show which, for lack of a better term, it may as well be called Gordon Ramsay Yells at Children. Because I am not kidding. There is a television show, MasterChef Juniors, in which you have little kids. These are like 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids put in high-pressure situations to cook meals with Gordon Ramsay yelling at them to do better.
What's that one little girl yelling? Like, whisk like a man or something, like, to one of her teammates?
Whisk like a man!
The standard was way above what we ever expected it to be. And so what we needed to do was up the ante on these challenges because they were just getting that good.
I'll see if I get that sound bite. Ooh, that'd be good. Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was funny that you were like, should I be excited about the new Gordon Ramsay show? And I love Gordon Ramsay. And jokingly, I was like, oh, is he yelling at kids this time? And then you hit play. And yes, he really was. Yeah.
So that looks awesome. However, there is another thing that I want to talk about. And
You're breaking the rules.
Well, I make the rules.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You do.
We brought the rules into the world and we can take them out. I do want to talk about another thing. And this is actually something that I was genuinely excited about. I mean, okay, I'm genuinely excited about Gordon Ramsay yelling at children who are whisking like girls. That being said, this was actually a really, really humbling thing, and it showed up on Twitter late last night. I actually saw it. Twitter is really bad at telling me when I have updates, which is very annoying because it's 2013, and we have technology that should be able to do this. I'm very, very annoyed by that. My grandparents didn't fight in WW2 because
I was hoping you would say WWF.
My grandparents did not fight in WW2 to provide me a world that where Twitter doesn't work properly. They weren't in WW2 at all, I don't think. I received a tweet and I'll post it. I don't know how to pronounce this Twitter handle right here. Aaron, can you help me out with that? I don't know how to pronounce that.
I can't actually see it very well from here.
Okay, good cop out. So it says, I loved Untitled. That was the episode name of our last episode. Another one that Dell probably never listened to. But not the way you might think. And I was like, what?
It sounded like it was going to go somewhere where I was going to be like, oh, this guy.
Yeah, I was like, oh, come on. That was a good episode. I liked it. Like, what do you have for me? And I clicked on the link and it took me to a Google Plus page. And the first thing I read, I was like floored, and I didn't even finish it before I ran out to show Aaron, who I was in the cafe attached to our work, and I ran into the work to show him. It says, regarding Untitled, I kept thinking, this is not an RPG setting. This is a deck-building board game. Hear me out. And then he proceeds to go into, three paragraphs about the mechanics behind how you could make a deck builder based on the campaign Crucible setting that we created in our last episode. And I was so, like, incredibly overcome with just awesome, like, I don't even know how to explain. I'm speechless, honestly.
I held you and you wept.
I'm about to cry right now. I'm tearing up because I was so humbled by this. It's so cool And I think that, you know, I speak for myself, but I hopefully I speak for Aaron and Dell in saying, you know, thank you so much for this. You know, we really appreciate it. I'm going to send you a message after this, but, we're recording it before I had a chance to do that. But that's just really awesome. And I think that, like, you know, despite the fact that, you know, we joke around a lot, like, we're on episode 38 now, and so we haven't been doing this for very long. Longer than we thought we'd ever last. I'll give you that. But this is exactly the type of thing where it's like we might have hoped to someday inspire someone else to just do something creative when it came to games and just put their thoughts on paper. And the fact that, like, you know, if they did it based on something that we had sort of came up with on the fly is really, really cool. And I just wanted to shout out Hani. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I don't know. But it meant a lot to us to see that. And thank you so much for you know, linking us to that. And if anyone else has any sort of other things that, you know, if any sort of feedback where, you know, we helped inspire them, please, by all means, like, that means the world to us. And it actually validates the fact that, you know, we're doing this podcast where we basically are doing it to hear ourselves talk about things that we like.
Yeah, I haven't got to see the mechanics yet because you haven't forwarded me the link. But when you do, I will go ahead and read it, and I'm excited just that it exists.
Yeah,
I will submit that it can be both a deck-building card game and an RPG setting.
And a Saturday morning cartoon.
And it can definitely be a Saturday morning cartoon mm-hmm. and a summer blockbuster starring Vin Diesel. Mm-hmm. But
as me. I want Vin Diesel to play me. Telling the story to, like, his kids about uh-huh. this thing that happened, and then having it, like, cut to some, like, I don't know, who's playing you?
I don't know. Probably someone not as flattering as Vin Diesel, because we blew all our budget on Vin Diesel. I'm probably the guy from that movie, The New Guy. That's probably me.
You're the new guy?
Yeah, you know that guy? Like, no. A skinny, awkward guy?
No.
It's funny, but not exactly who you want to look like. so... Yeah, I'm eager to read it, and I think it's awesome that we got it.
Yeah, I mean I you know, hopefully we can correspond a little bit further on this, but I'm interested in actually, like, you know, let's talk about it. Let's see, like, you know, I love talking about games, and, you know, we've mentioned a few times on the show, you know, we're aspiring game designers of our own right. You know, we're lucky enough to sort of work within the games industry. But we also are aspiring designers as well. And this is really cool. Like, I would love to just, you know, chat with someone about, you know, design who's not in my immediate circle of people I already do that with. So, yeah. So that's what. So I'm excited, kind of excited about two things. MasterChef Juniors and Hani's Untitled Deck Builder. I was thinking, why not just Taggers? Wouldn't that work for that name? Just Taggers?
Titan Taggers?
No, that's Titan Taggers. Not Titan Taggers. Just Taggers.
Sure, like, I guess
wouldn't that be what they would call them in that world?
Sure.
If you don't know what we're talking about, listen to episode 37. It's Campaign Crucible episode. It's really good. Dell, that means you as well, because I know you don't listen to any episodes, especially not the ones you're not on. That being said, if you have listened to us on iTunes, you can, of course, subscribe. It means a lot to us, and it helps us get in the ears of more people. We welcome all ratings that you give us on iTunes as well. If it's a 5-star review, we'd love to read it on the air. And if it's not, that's okay, too. We just love to get feedback. We are always trying to do better. If you're listening on Stitcher Radio, which I know that... Aaron listens to the podcast on. I use it myself when I'm at work because, frankly, it is a better way to listen to podcasts for me at work than iTunes does, or than iTunes is on my work computer. But if you're listening on Stitcher, you can give us a thumbs up. You can click the little star button. That also helps us get into more people's ears. But the best way to help us get into more people's ears, and the only real thing that we ask from our listeners as a gift from you to us is to what, Aaron?
It's to tell your friends about us.
Yes.
Whether that means
whoa. That was like a really, like, your word, dying breath was,
I
like,
I don't know. Please cut that out. So whether that means to go the superliminal route and open your window right now and just shout, hey, you, listen to the NPC cast.
It's my podcast and I want it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We made two nerdy references just then.
Yep.
Or to post it on your, you know, link it on Twitter or Facebook or,
sure.
or you know, however getting out, helping us get out there is very much appreciated. And so if you like it, please share it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we see every single week, you know, we see the people who are subscribing to our iTunes. We see the people who are, you know, clicking and downloading our episodes, and it's growing every week. And we can only imagine that's not because we're doing anything better. That's only because you guys are telling your friends.
It's definitely not yeah, because we're doing anything
it's
better.
It's certainly not for no, that reason.
I mean,
if anything, we are getting worse.
Yeah,
we peaked like 40 episodes ago, and those were episodes we did not even air.
If you said 39, it would have been that. It would have been the secret episode.
The episode zero?
Episode zero.
We'll never see the light of day.
No, and it shouldn't.
Right, it was horrible.
Despite it being the current peak. of our right. quality, well, according
we
to
can't,
this tangent
we can't,
that
we can't bring that out because it's then we'll be held to a higher standard.
And who wants that? That sounds like hard work.
On that note, you can add 1,000 XP to your character sheets, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
NPC Cast is written by Chris, Dell, and Aaron. You can reach us on Twitter at twitter.com/NPCcast or by email at thenpccast@gmail.com. As always, support your local game store.